Welcome to the American Horror Story Podcast, the officially unofficial podcast for American Horror Story Freak Show on the FX Network. Tonight we're talking about episode 411.
I'm your host, Cecily.
Magical Thinking. I'm your host, Aaron. You've been acquainted, I'm sure, with my co-host, Cecily. I am glad to be back.
Are you?
I am. Well, I'm glad to be back with this episode because I don't know, gentle listeners, if you could tell, but I was starting to check out on this season. I was really getting...
It wasn't going well for us as a team. As, like, us, the audience, just the whole group of us, we weren't holding together very well.
No. It was a bad situation. But I feel like I'm reinvigorated. Other than continuing not to care about Jimmy, I liked everything that happened in this episode.
Yeah, can we just talk about the entire episode and just not talk about Jimmy's scenes? Because, like, who cares?
Sure.
Just gloss right over it.
I don't think I can do that contractually, but sure. Yeah. I feel you on that.
Okay.
But no, we've missed you guys. Things have gotten weird.
Things are weird.
Things have gotten weird without this outlet. We just sit around and we plot how to murder our cat and we discuss these plans right in front of her. It's the only way we can possibly pay back.
It's cat shaming and there's nothing wrong with it. I don't think a jury in the world would convict us.
It's the only way we can deal with the psychological torment that she puts us through.
And physical?
Yeah.
Psychological, physical,
I turned my
emotional?
Back for one night tonight. She stole a burrito off my plate.
Shoot.
Drug it onto the floor. She doesn't even eat burritos.
She just nibbled on it and drug it around. Like, who even wants a burrito? She's just a little shit.
Yeah, that was my food. She didn't want it. She just wanted to deny me it. And someone's going to give me grief for telling my cat in a calm voice. I'm not yelling. I'm telling her matter-of-factly how I'm going to murder her.
And
she looks at me and she knows.
She knows. She's aware by now. I think we may be a little off topic, though.
Yes, you're right.
Magical thinking. So this episode was directed by Michael Goy. I believe that's how you pronounce his name. He has cinematography credits for 66 films and TV shows. He's done a couple episodes of American Horror Story. He did a movie in 2011 called Megan is Missing that he directed about two teenage girls who become victims of online predators. And the third and final thing that he's directed in his official capacity is Sexy Urban Legends. So if anyone knows that classic.
No stranger to fucked up entertainment, this guy.
Which probably explains why everyone's so craving crazy sex.
Why?
And the episode was written because he directed Sexy Urban Legends.
Oh, yes,
first thing he directed.
Okay.
So
there you go.
He's all about freaks getting it on.
Sure.
And this episode is written by Brad Falchuk. So there's that guy again. You remember Brad Falchuk. He does most of the projects with Ryan Murphy.
Yeah. So you think Ryan Murphy had this director on like Rolodex, like it just is really deep in the file for when I want to have conjoined twins get freaky. I need the master of freaky sex. And he pulled the guy's name and gave him a call. And the guy leapt at the chance.
You know what? I would actually love to know how this process generally works.
Yeah.
I'm sure it's different for each person. There's a certain level of, I don't know, professional knowledge of each other that you employ.
I think so. Like, I feel like in a lot of writing rooms, if there's a complicated action sequence, people are like, we need Michelle McLaren.
Yeah.
If Ryan Murphy's hold up like, oh, I've got this fucked up script.
I know the perfect guy
for it.
Yeah, I feel like maybe with Game of Thrones that they do that they carefully pick and choose who's going to do what based on their experience.
Right.
I feel like shows like this and The Walking Dead, it's more of like a hat drawing pick of the litter.
It's more of a manatee with a beach ball kind of situation.
Yeah.
All right. I think that seems reasonable. Shall we talk about the episode?
Oh, right. That has to happen.
Magical Thinking, episode 411. We see Jimmy and Russell Edgington, they're right where we left them. Russell Edgington is trying to use his vampiric powers of suggestion to get him to sacrifice his hands for no damn good reason.
And he goes along with it for some reason.
And he says he's only going to take his left one, of course.
Of course.
I don't know. I would talk more about this, except I just don't care about Jimmy.
Yeah, I really don't.
If this is the stupid thing that Ryan Murphy has to do to get us to the point where someone kills Russell Edgington, then so be it.
Let's just talk about the interesting things. What do you think he drank out of that vial?
I, I thought it was going to be something to knock him out. Clearly, it was just like an emetic. So it could have been castor oil, like a whole bottle of castor oil.
So he was just throwing up?
Yeah.
I mean, if I were a prison guard, I would just let that slide.
Yeah.
I'd be like, he's just throwing up. It doesn't seem like a medical emergency.
I think that's what his whole thing was going to be. And then Russell Edgington mind fucked him with his con man abilities into thinking that he was some big shot lawyer type that would get him into some serious trouble. And at the end of the day, cops are just like blue collar working dudes. Like, if I was a police officer,
it's the '50s. I mean, I don't think that there were repercussions for police officers who were prejudiced. In fact, I think they were rewarded for that kind of stuff. It's one more different person that you got off the streets, right?
Huh.
In fact, police officers today don't get in trouble for killing different people, like black men in the street.
No, I mean, I hear what you're saying, but
do you?
It's not like, so let's say that you do have cops out there that are, you know, doing bad things. I still don't think they don't like to cut on camera for sure.
They don't have cameras.
But I'm saying they also don't like to do it in front of like people that know the law. Like, you know.
I don't think so.
I don't know. It's interesting.
I've seen Pleasantville. I know how it works.
So Jimmy wakes up in the hospital after
you skipped over the hooker ambulance driver.
The Viking god.
The Viking doctor ambulance driver.
God.
How much is he being paid?
I don't know.
To just show up and be complicit in these horrible crimes.
He's extraordinarily loyal hooker.
He's like a puppy dog. He's like a murder puppy dog.
He doesn't know how prostitution works. You buy him one drink and he basically is your manservant.
Yeah.
Until you dismiss him.
Yeah. He doesn't even know that all he has to do is just not pay him, but just put peanut butter on his balls and then he'll get what he's looking for free.
Oh, God. So anyway, they take him by horbulence. to the hospital, and Jimmy gets his hands amputated, and he wakes up, and there is a really bitchy nurse that won't give him anything for his pain because her friend was at that Tupperware party.
Those were her friends.
That's right. You know, one imagines they could have been locked in a basement at one point, but before they were fed upon and then thrown in that swimming pool. Russell Edgington strikes again.
Miss Swampa Sue Swampa.
So, we go, after the break, we come back and we see Dot and Bet are writing the final diary entries.
Yep. They're finally on board with the freak show. Dot lost her hair, which I actually thought was really cool hair, but, she ditched it, went back to her plain Jane roots.
Her comfortable mousy brown.
Yep. They're seeing the, freaks acting like freaks and they're being very charmed by it.
And, they're also really going to get their freak on. They want to, they are locked into the bone zone. They have the 1,000-yard cock stare throughout this episode until they finally get it. It's amazing to watch Sarah Paulson convey this.
Yeah. They're drinking those large bottles of root beer, but they still look thirsty.
They are thirsty as hell. What do they say about traveling salesmen? Are traveling salesmen like arch bushmasters?
I have no idea. I usually try to turn them away at the door.
What, is that code for something?
No.
So he's not just a traveling salesman. He's a lizard salesman.
He's a chameleon salesman. Okay.
Chameleon salesman.
And those chameleons were adorable.
They were adorable.
Is that what chameleons look like in real life?
It's Neil Patrick Harris.
I thought they were bigger.
He's doing magic.
With a chameleon, it's adorable.
Everything's adorable until he brings out his ventriloquist friend, Marjorie, right?
Marjorie, yep.
Then things start to get really dark really fast. We had this question when we were watching it, is why Doogie Howser is seeing these two strange women on Dot and Bette's head.
And I swore the woman on the right at first was Lorna from Orange is the New Black.
Yeah, it did look like her. But then when we got to the sequence of them being actually alive and we found out what all is going on, it's not her at all.
No.
But it did look a little like it's Lorna. Not.
Lorna would never do that to her. To Christopher?
No, but she no. No, she did. She went gay for this day.
No, she would never cheat on Christopher willingly.
She went gay for the stay.
That's a different podcast. Okay.
How'd you dead to rights? Anyway, so, we find out poor Doogie, he's a
war vet, he's got a like half a metal brain or something, he's from Georgia, and he has to deal with those winters.
Yeah, those harsh Georgia winters.
Poor guy.
And he said, is anyone interested in magic? And I think Bette and Dot seriously want to play with his wand.
And the audience had a resounding yes.
And we said, Bette and Dot thought to themselves, I hope the war hasn't broken anything important.
Who the fuck thinks like that?
But you know, that's disgustingly objectifying and insensitive to a man with a war wound like that.
Yeah, you know what? I don't think women respect men's rights to have their bodies not be objectified
that. They don't. They really need to respect that autonomy.
They do.
But anyway, the thing is Chester, I think, might have been a more successful magician if he hadn't gone with that whole The Molester stage name.
And you know what?
No one books them for a birthday party.
I know. And this is the child, Aaron, that I'm podcasting with. But he came up with the Chester the Molester joke before we ever heard it said on screen.
Sure. Which I thought was kind of clever. But then when they brought it up in the show, I was like, oh, that's so stupid. That's like grade school. And then I realized, but I said it first.
Yeah, you
and
did.
I literally had an internal wah, wah, like Debbie Downer moment.
No, that was me saying it directly into your ear.
But he's actually pretty good. He's got a pretty good act.
For a molester.
It's not bad. He makes little boys' pants disappear. Del visits Jimmy.
And then we can just skip this, right? No? Okay. All right. Just do it. Just make it quick.
Okay. Here's the deal.
Do they really want me to feel any kind of sympathy for these two murderers? Cold-blooded murderers?
Not only that.
Just all around pieces of shit.
Not only that. And this show, like True Blood, gets really heavy-handed in its metaphor. But this whole thing, when Jimmy said, imagine that, being labeled a freak just for being normal.
Oh, my God.
That's one of the baconest, gauntliest, ham-fisted metaphors for what it's like to be gay. I mean, I don't know because I'm not gay. I don't know if a gay person's watching that and are they like rolling their eyes so hard at how trite that is?
This has nothing to do with being gay.
Yes, it does. Oh, no, yes, it does.
No, it doesn't. What he's saying is that he hasn't come out to be about being gay to Jimmy. What he's saying is that he was being like persecuted for having sweaty hands. That's the stupidest thing I've ever heard.
No, but I'm saying that was Dell took that when he said his son said that. He took that as like a realization.
No.
Of I'm being treated a freak for being having normal human beings. Totally.
You're giving him way too much credit.
If you don't think that's obvious metaphor.
Sure. But you're giving Del way too much credit.
No. But I'm talking to the show. The show is what I'm not giving credit.
What?
I'm saying,
no, give credit to the show. Don't give credit to Del. Say
I'm not
this is the metaphor.
Give anybody credit.
Listen. Just listen.
Okay.
This is the metaphor that we as the audience have taken away. Del himself has not picked up on that. He doesn't realize he's being persecuted for being gay or different.
I just think the concept of a family of freaks persecuting the normal boy is so fucking Twilight Zone, 1950s, C-grade Star Trek episode metaphor for being different in society that it's just played out. It is played out. So, but again, this got Jimmy in it too, so I was predisposed to hate it. And then it's like, oh my God, then when I thought it couldn't get grosser, he's shoving rice into the face of Jimmy, who Evan, for whatever reason, has decided to play this as he's regressing to a 5-year-old child. I understand he's drugged and all.
Well, that's what he said.
He's like, gaga, goo goo. And he's like, I can't believe it. I'm over 50 and it's the first time I'm feeding my son.
Yeah. It's
like with tears in his eyes. I'm like, get the fuck out of here, both of you. Both of you.
Yeah, no. That's why I wanted to skip this.
You know, I only got Del gone, Jimmy like 10% gone. We're making progress. There's 110% less Jimmy and Del in the show now.
Yeah, no, I think there's a little bit more of Jimmy. I'm on the side of there being a little bit more of him gone because a lot of his hubris was in those hands.
Mm-hmm.
Jesus.
The lady plays the power.
You thought he was mopey as fuck before? Wait till he gets out. Wandering through the woods. Wait, where is he?
I don't know.
We don't know.
He's there. The freak show is hiding him, presumably, or they've shipped him off to wherever freaks go.
Okay.
Anyway.
Let's hope he kept a diary.
Marjorie
says where they are.
We see this routine of Marjorie, which is Chester's dummy, but she doesn't like to be called that. And I gotta say, as he's doing his act, I thought Neil Patrick Harris was a really good fake ventriloquist.
Yeah.
And this is the context I should set the scene of. He's doing his routine for Miss Elsa to try to get a spot on the freak show. And she turns him down. She goes, look, we're a freak show. You're not a freak. You're just a magician. Go fuck yourself. And he says, well, maybe I can stand out front and sell baby lizards. And Elsa said, chameleons. Nobody wants to buy baby lizards.
Chameleons, you guys.
Well, are you like the Hank of chameleons?
I'm really taken with the chameleons.
They're minerals, Marie. Jesus Christ.
I never watched that show.
That's a lie.
I was really not.
Nobody wants to buy baby lizards, Elsa says. That is a lie. Speaking of lies, everyone wants to buy baby lizards. Did you see those chameleons? They were adorable. Yeah. I want a baby lizard right now.
Let's go get one.
Okay.
Fuck this podcast, Lizard Town.
We're going to pause it, and we're going to go to PetSmart, and we're going to get a baby chameleon. I think they've got them. Bearded dragons. If not, we'll get a bearded dragon. They're adorable, too.
And we're back with all of our lizards.
It's a fucking menagerie here in the studio.
There's so many lizards.
And this just proves the point that he made like $15, $20, which I think is like $1 million in 1950s terms.
No, $1 million lizard dollars.
A million chameleon dollars. Oh, a shit. Chameleon dollars.
A chameleon dollars. I love
He's a chameleonaire. So,
Jesus.
You know what he actually is? He's good with numbers because he's got all these things down. And Elsa May sees it, and she's got a nose for business. And then she starts turning tricks for books. If she says, if you help with the books, then I will let you do your little puppet show / magic routine as a warm-up act.
Hmm.
And Marjorie has this permanently judgy bitch face. Like, we talk about resting bitch face, but if you carve a dummy in a bitch face, it's going to be stuck there. It's not resting.
Yeah.
It's actively maintaining that bitchy visage. Mm-hmm. And I just think as Neil Patrick Harris starts talking, as Chester starts talking to Marjorie right in front of Elsa, she's got this kind of like mask on her face. What is she thinking in this scene?
I think she has just realized that she hired an insane person.
But then she sold the place to him.
I just did the math. It looks like he was making $177 approximately each night selling chameleons.
That's not bad.
Yeah, that's respect. Every night, that's pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah, you're going to be clearing over $1,000 a week.
Yeah.
That's enough, you know, for traveling. I mean, how much expenses you got as a traveling lizard man?
Yeah. So I think at this point, going back to the bitch face comment, I think at this point she's realized that she sold she's hired an insane person, but thinks that there's a possibility that it's just the act.
Plus it's like
when you get really into your character and
being eccentric is kind of part of the game, right?
I'm surprised the ventriloquist doll didn't come out sooner, actually.
Hmm. Yeah. As much as he needed the ventriloquist.
Yeah, and he was showing off to all the...
Or the dummy?
Yeah, showing off to all the freaks when he first arrived.
He can just go up and sell lizards to people.
Chameleons.
I've suffered this long enough. A chameleon is a lizard.
Damn it.
They're in the same kingdom or phylum or species.
I'm not going to stop correcting you. Please continue.
But anyway, yeah. I forget the point I was
going to
make.
You were going to say that...
Yes, he can sell chameleons in front of a crowd. Just go up door to door, sell chameleons all day long, hawk them outside of tents and stuff. But he can't make whoopee with a woman without a doll. Like, it feels like going up and talking to strangers is hard. Having sex with women's easy.
Is it?
Comparatively speaking, I think. I'd much rather have sex with women than talk to strangers. My God. Nothing good can come of the talking strangers unless they're a woman who eventually had... No, that's a terrible sentiment.
Wow.
I know. I pulled it back. I couldn't even go there.
I think that I go to the state fair every year.
Yeah.
So
have sex with straight... What?
Oh, my God. So many carnies. But that's beside the point. You go there. You're loaded with cash. No one takes a card there. So you got to be carrying tons of cash, right?
Uh-huh.
So you show up to the freak show. You're ready to buy popcorn, ready to buy a lizard. They're kind of like the little goldfish you win from throwing the ball into the... Yeah.
Then, chameleons are just edgy enough that it's like, you know, like you, if someone just was on the street or at a carnival offering you a chameleon, you'd be like, no, no, no. But if you go to a freak show, you're kind of primed to buy a weird lizard that can change color and look at two different things with its eyes at the same time.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, you're ready to go. I mean, my God, there's the astounding lizard girl.
Right.
And she's on the board. You're there to see her. You want to take part of that magic home.
She should have been on board with that. Where was she? I needed her to come up and just buy his whole stock.
Yeah. She should have been, she could have been the showgirl or the model girl, the booth babe.
Booth babe. Got it.
But it turns out he doesn't need to hawk his lizards. He's hired on as a bookkeeper slash magician, which seems like a great idea. Yeah. It doesn't make sense that Elsa puts a crazy man in charge of her books. Like, I don't care how clever with numbers he is. What if those are just, like, the ravings of a madman? Like, beautiful mind style.
It looked pretty good, and that's all that really counts, isn't it? Isn't that how the IRS works?
Yeah.
They don't really read that stuff, right? Yeah,
that's not what my accountant says, anyway.
They haven't read mine so far. I just doodle little pictures of, like, butterflies and kittens. As long as you turn it in, folks, that's how you get by it. With the tax evasion.
You write all your numbers with like little kitty faces, your little threes or like, you know, kitten faces.
Exactly.
Marjorie is back in her tent tearing Chester down, saying how this woman's treating you like a fool and you're stupid and et cetera, et cetera. Paul steps in, the seal boy. Catches him talking to Marjorie, which is like, okay, this is weird. But then he also says to Chester, you might want to go easy on that rouge. Because, admittedly, NPH was laying it on thick. He was going for vaudeville 1920s when he should have been going for freak show 1950s.
He was. Do you know how insanely bad those stage lights are? They just wash you out completely. We worked in a community theater for a long time, and to make women appear older, they would draw like these dark wrinkle lines across their faces and their forehead.
Sure.
And you look at it, and you're like, how does that
look?
That
looks like a 3-year-old made you up.
You look terrible, and then they get on stage, and you're like, wow, tricks of the eye, man, and that's what NPH is all about.
Indeed. So we move on to Elsa packing up. And Dell comes in all in a huff and says he wants to kill Spencer for screwing over his boy out of his hands. And then he said something that I actually didn't make the connection. He's like, look, how can he defend himself in prison, which he goes back to tomorrow, if he doesn't have hands? And I'm like, ooh, that's a really solid point.
Should have worked on his lobster feet.
Like maybe, you know, Jimmy is a tough dude. He can take care of himself. But you got two stumps, two raw stumps.
Blah.
Like maybe even one of those Merle jobs from The Walking Dead. But even then, the stumps are raw. That's no fun.
Right.
So he storms out after Elsa says, you need to figure out how to do something. And Amazon Eve catches up to him. Mm-hmm. And just when I thought that I was done with Dell, they form a supergroup.
Jesus.
She says, you know what you said about that super or the strong man and strong woman act? He's like, look, you know, I'm sorry. I don't have time to fight with you. She goes, no, I think we should get that act together. I want to help you. Help Jimmy.
I hate this a lot.
You do?
Yeah. I think it's stupid. I mean, how could she possibly forgive him for doing that?
She doesn't forgive Dell.
She doesn't say it. I think it would have been cooler if she had said something like, I want to help you do this thing because Jimmy's my friend too, but as soon as we do this, I'm gonna kill you.
That would be fucking, that, yeah. That was a,
that I could get behind. I want her to say something really intimidating to make him know that she's not over it, but it seems like she's over it, and I hate that.
But she did kick his ass.
It still doesn't make it okay.
Yeah, true. It doesn't make it okay to kill someone. You're exactly right.
Or an attempted rape. I feel like that's what was implied, is that
she thought that was what he was trying to do?
Yeah.
I guess that's true.
I mean, I thought
you're right. Because from my perspective, I was thinking she thought it was him trying to kill her.
Yeah.
But
and she was.
It was just rape.
Yeah.
I said it. I thought I threw enough irony into the just that people would get it. But let me just make
all right.
That's an ironic statement.
I need
statement.
You to make that explicit.
It's explicitly ironic. So, where are we at? Chester visits Dot and Bette and gifts them a music box. And I'm not sure why. It seems like that's an over-the-top gesture for someone that you're first meeting. Clearly, he's sweet on them, and he's got some kind of psychosexual thing with his old lover's faces imposed on her body. But still, Bette and Dot, because they're just fresh off the farm, think that's super charming.
Yeah,
Yeah, and it is a nice box.
It's kind of like him offering them a sign-on bonus for their new job.
Mm. And I believe it's implied that he found it in the old antique tent anyway. So maybe it's not like he went out and bought that.
I want a cool jewelry box like that.
It is a cool. It was cool. But yeah, he's been dumpster diving back in Elsa's old tent of stuff. And he found a lot of different things. But the thing that's important to the plot is he found a genuine something-something Saw Girl in Half Box.
Song box, yeah.
Song box. And he said, I want you to be my assistant because...
The box that I saw.
The box that I saw. And because, you know, you're so distracting. And they're like, why? Because we're freaks. And he goes, no. It's because you're beautiful.
That's such a weird thing.
And their hearts turn into eyes. All four of them.
Yeah. Their hearts turn into eyes.
And he said, it's like I was seeing old friends. And then his eye starts twitching. And you're like, oh, God, this is going to go weird places.
Yeah.
Because it's American Horror.
American Horror, and this is their story.
As his eyes twitching, we flash back, presumably, to him wearing his war uniform. He's sitting in a corner in a dark room. Marjorie is on his lap, and he's watching two women make lesbian love to each other.
When do you think Marjorie was born? When he returned home to the stateside?
I don't know, because that's approximately the right age.
I think that his head got messed up.
Like, if he created, because I'm thinking she's like 9 or 11.
When they replace it with the, who?
A Marjorie.
9 or 11?
Yeah.
What are you talking about?
Marjorie, how old she is. Like, in the show, how old she's supposed to be.
Oh, I don't think you can pin age on her at all.
Well, that's what I'm saying. So, she's like, if he...
Like a human doll.
If she's a delusion that he dreamed up in World War II to cope, and then he came home and had... I mean, which do you... I guess there's a lot of open questions here. Let's just go ahead and talk about it. Is Marjorie a possessed doll running around and killing people?
No, I think she's just a pure hallucination.
Okay.
There's been multiple times where she's spoken to him and addressed him and no one else can see her in that humanish form.
Uh-huh.
So I think the human type form is just a manifestation of his mind. And I don't think that doll has ever aged, or the human that, you know, is playing the doll, I guess. Mm. Are we supposed to think that he still sees the doll? But it's, theater people are so weird.
But I think what I'm saying is that there's nothing in this universe that would imply that that's impossible. I mean, we've seen ghosts and things being possessed and weird magical things happening. So I'm just saying that that possibility in my mind is at least open, because they did an interesting walked an interesting line that everything we saw the doll do could be explained by him moving it or Dandy moving it at the end. But he insists that he's innocent. And what if we see in a flashback where the doll really did kill the girls?
Okay. I don't agree, but usually I'm wrong in these scenarios.
Because you're just not willing to admit crazy things are.
Yeah, I think he just got a metal plate in his head, or metal plate in his head, and it fucked him up good.
I think that's likely. So anyway, that's that scene. The cop shows up to take Jimmy in. And they put him in the back of the paddy wagon. They're going to transfer him from the hospital to the prison. And Amazon Eve steps into the headlights and throws a brick through their window and almost her whole body.
I believe you skipped a scene.
What scene did I skip?
It's a brief scene, but it's the one where...
he cuts the woman in half and everybody applauds?
Yeah.
But the only thing significant about that is the private detective is in the background.
We see that the private detective is watching them and they... I mean, he's winking at her and he's making all the signs, which, I don't know, would lead me to believe that he wanted to sleep with her.
Hmm.
So, yeah, I guess it wasn't anything.
Well, no, I got ahead of myself.
Yeah.
Hey,
you skipped it on purpose? You know you did.
No.
Why'd you do that?
No.
You did.
No.
Explain yourself.
Get out of here. Amazon Eve almost gets ran over by a truck why did she step right into the path of traffic?
I don't know, she wanted her aim to be true when she threw a rock directly through the windshield.
Damn. Well, anyway, it works. They spin out of control. They get out to take care of Amazon Eve, and Dell jumps up behind with a tire iron and
Dell attack
beats two cops to death to rescue his son.
He doesn't knock them out, he caves their faces in.
Yeah,
actually one of them. I don't know if Eve killed the other one, but I don't think she would do that. I think he's just...
No. He clubbed the one behind the head, which maybe he's knocked out. Maybe he's dead.
Wait, don't they later say that they killed two cops?
Yeah, you're right. He did.
Wow.
But he beat the one guy's face into jelly, which will be interesting to talk about later. Because there? I think it ties into another scene. Dell takes a bullet too. Takes a bullet, keeps on going.
Okay, this is where Eve kind of gets her licks in, and she says, "Good," when he says it hurts like hell.
Right, right. Yeah. If the bullet doesn't kill you, I will. Scott and Bette give Chester a complete fucking meltdown over the concept of deflowering him.
Scott and Bette?
I said Dot, didn't I?
No, you said Scott.
Scott and Bette.
Scott and Bette.
Give Chester. Well, wow. You know, Dot's a little, she's confused. They get, you know? She's accepting so many new things.
Yeah. So they're getting all sexied up and they want to fuck.
They want to fuck. She says, we're aware of this is many men's fantasy, having sex with two women. And then Marjorie says, not his. And he says, shut up. And the twins are like, nope, still getting boned.
Yeah, I'm just going to pretend I didn't hear that.
Yeah, it's like, what? Let me ask you this. Because Chris Rock's got this one funny bit about a woman knows whether she's going to fuck you within like 30 seconds of meeting you.
Yeah.
And the only thing your dumbass can do is open your mouth and say something so stupid that it shakes her out.
No, you're crediting that to the wrong person. It was Louis C.K. that said that.
Oh, was it Louis C.K.?
Yeah.
Okay. So if we apply that a theory here, what thing could Neil Patrick Harris say that was so crazy that they wouldn't want him inside them?
He could say, do you want to watch The Wizard of Oz?
That would do it? Really?
Yeah, that's why they snapped and killed their mother. Do you remember?
Oh.
Wow. Damn it, that joke fell flat.
Well, you know, hopefully some of our fans got it. And you can get some pity laughs from. Oh, what? I'm sorry. So we have this creepy flashback of him, again, watching the two girls have sex together.
Who we don't know who they are yet.
We don't know who they are, but we do realize that they're the same two girls that were on Bette and Scott's head earlier. So we know that there's some significance to all this.
Yeah, and I assumed that he had some sort of fetish for watching with dolls after he got back from the war, right?
And then as...
it seems like the kind of stuff that you pay people to do instead of them just doing it willingly.
Right.
Well, I know. I'm a Midwesterner.
What's interesting is... As he's preparing to have sex with them, he says, can Marjorie join us because she relaxes me? And Bette and Dot say, whatever you need.
Did you see the look of horror and like acceptance on Bette's face where she's like,
still happening.
Okay.
Still
yep.
happening.
Yep. I need
still,
that D.
Still not crazy enough. And then we get twin sex. It was, reasonably hot.
It made me feel very uncomfortable.
What did it?
Why? Entire time. It's the exclamations of pain.
Oh, that, yeah.
And, like, the fact that I am so acutely aware of how gay Neil Patrick Harris is.
Yes, I was about to say, is it weird seeing Neil Patrick Harris double up on Sarah Paulson? So, after the twin sex, we see Dandy has hired a private dick to spy on the twins.
A private dick.
And the private dick says that, hey, these twins are crazy for the ventriloquist.
Look at these pictures of them fucking.
Yeah. And Dandy is crying and says, why do you think this happens? He's like, who knows what's in the mind of those two freaks? And he says, don't call them freaks. So I think it's funny because, you know, he's got the classic when he first went to the freak show and he looked through his little brass binoculars. He had that creepy freaks. And now he's saying, don't call them that. Dandy's grown as a character.
Wow. I'm really surprised that he's got a private detective looking into this stuff. Like, I could do that shit. I could watch from the back of a public show and I could...
You should totally be a private detective.
And I could watch through someone's window while they have sex. It doesn't seem that hard, honestly.
I'd do it for free for no good reason now.
So my point is that... Why isn't the millionaire cop doing this for him? Why is he paying yet another guy too much money?
Compartmentalization,
to do
man.
Some bullshit.
Compartmentalization. You gotta keep one of the guy's hands clean, squeaky clean. You have the one guy do the dirty stuff, and you have the one guy do the not so dirty stuff.
Whose hands are clean?
The private eyes. He's not guilty of any crime.
Besides watching people have sex through their windows? You don't think there's a problem with that?
That's true. Like, can private investigators do shit like that?
No,
like,
I'm pretty sure there's some sort of law that protects you from having your own private domicile being invaded.
Hmm. So they could, like, take pictures of you and your mistress leaving the hotel, and they could find credit card statements of unexplained gifts, but they couldn't actually like put a hidden microphone and a camera in a hotel to catch a husband cheating on his wife if the wife hires them to do so.
I don't know. I'd be interested to know the rules of what like a paparazzi can do.
Well, that's a different thing, but I thought that somehow Private Eyes had some kind of extra legal powers, but that probably doesn't make... No, that's probably wrong.
It's
a wrong assumption by me.
Yeah.
Okay, this is the Aaron is a dumbass and doesn't understand how the world works podcast. Thank you for joining us.
That's not true. I'm sure, I hope people will tell us how wrong we are and correct us.
I just think Private Eyes, I've always thought that. It's such an interesting career.
Oh, yeah, no, it's really cool.
And, like, now things are just blown up because, like, with Facebook and the internet, like, it's so much more sophisticated. Everything they could find out, probably legally.
Yeah, no, super cool in the 20s, you know, when you got the dame and she's like,
"See here now.
How you doing, honey?"
That's right.
That wasn't my lipstick on that cigarette butt.
Shows up with the black shawl because her husband's been murdered.
The veil. She's still in mourning. You can't be kissing her.
That don't get fresh, see?
See? Yeah, being a private eye is cool as fuck. Super illegal.
Yeah, all right. Well, if you're a private eye and you're listening to this podcast, we actually like to do a podcast with you. We'll do a private eye podcast. We'll help you get that going.
If you are Hall & Oates, please call in and let us know what you know about private eyes.
I hear
that
they're
watching you.
All right. So we then see that, after this sequence with Dandy, Chester's so happy with his newfound sexual freedom with the twins that he's done with Marjorie. He wants to lock her away in her little coffin-ish dummy box. And she says, "You can't lock me away. I'll tell everything to everyone." And he then flashes back to when Marjorie was stolen by his ex-wife's, his murdered wife's lover. And he told her, "You can steal my wife, but you can't have her." And he's just uber obsessed with his doll.
Yeah.
But he maintains that he didn't actually kill them.
So... what's the story? So the story is that the neighbor ladies fell in love while their husbands were at war.
Yep.
He came back with some serious fucked up shit in his head.
Yep.
But the wife is such a, I'm calling her bitch because she's flaunting this new relationship in front of him.
Well, but like, you know, maybe he said that's what he wanted.
I mean,
he's sitting there watching. I mean, it's weird and fucked up all around, but I'm not sure I know enough to assign moral judgment.
I'm just saying that he doesn't look super approving. You can say yes as much as you want, but when you're sitting there with that face and a doll in your lap,
sure,
I'm not buying it.
Yeah, but man,
like if
weird
I were to
people.
Fall, if I were to fall in love with a woman while you're over here podcasting all day, I don't know. I couldn't do it. I just couldn't do it.
Who are you talking about? Is that bitch Charlene? No, I see what you're saying. I see what you're saying. I'm just saying that, like, I've read enough Reddit AMAs with prostitutes to know there's some fucked up shit people do to get off. Like,
sure.
Men sobbing while they're being beaten.
Absolutely. I'm not questioning that.
His demeanor on his face might have nothing to do with what he wants to get out of that situation or what he is getting out of that situation.
I'm not questioning that at all.
Okay.
It's his wife and his relationship deteriorating, and she's just having sex with another person that she loves more now.
Uh-huh.
This is so weird.
I get that. It's a weird fucked up situation. I'm not saying, but I don't know that it's not consensual, which is also weird.
So you're telling me that he always watched her, like, masturbate?
No. I'm saying he comes back from the war, and she could have been like, "Oh, my God, I'm with Charlene now."
Oh, you know what? It has been 4 years. No, this is weird. I hate this.
Okay. But no, that's what I'm saying. Like, she comes back and he's like, "I'm in love with Charlene." He's like, "Well, let's make it work. I'm an open-minded guy. I just want to watch, and I've always wanted to involve my doll. If I let you have this lesbian woman and I still provide for you and I don't divorce you, then you got to let me watch and bring the doll in." I can see some weird contract like that being formed.
So why is he not into it if this was his idea?
No. I think, well, I don't know. I don't know if he's into it or not. My point is, what he's really not into is the lesbian stealing his doll from him. And then he snapped, clearly. Or doll got enraged and used her magical powers to murder these two women. Okay. But we're getting ahead of ourselves. We see that Chester's in the middle of having his angry discussion with Marjorie. And Paul comes in and says, "I hate to interrupt you talking to yourself, but Elsa wants to talk to you." And I'm pissed because us freaks passed around a tin cup and we put all of our savings in it. And Elsa.
We got together 10 cents.
Elsa threw us out her tent, said it was a pittance. It was literally pie tints.
There were also some cherry pits in there.
Yes, it was cherry pittance, the cup. And she said they got a better offer, and it turns out it's Chester. So a lot of the freaks are going to be pissed with Chester, so, regardless of anything else in the story that happens.
Chester and his secret money.
Yeah.
Because why not?
Because Elsa explains it. She lampshades it by saying, in the 3 seconds I looked at your number figures, I saw that you're a well-heeled man.
Oh, I didn't get that. I thought she just drew a general assessment of how...
No, it's still ridiculous because I don't think you can look at 3 pages in 2 seconds and say that someone's got a ton of money unless it was literally a written statement that says, I have a ton of money.
14 plus 7 plus 6 equals shit ton of money. That's what she read.
But then again, I don't have the nose for business, so what do I know? Let's see. Anyway... what I thought was interesting about this scene is Elsa says there was a bunch of contractual obligations contingent upon him owning the thing. And one of them was you can't fire anyone and you can't change anything, even the order of the show. And then he immediately announces he's got a new headliner, which is Marjorie.
Is that what she said?
Yeah.
I don't think she said the order, really.
No, she said down to the order, which...
Well, what's she going to do about it?
I know, but I just
she's
like...
She's going to Hollywood.
They haven't signed anything yet. It seems like if he's like, okay, but I'm going to flaunt your number one of your conditions, she would be like, sales off.
Is the contract
except
like,
if she's greedy.
Yeah, no, you can even tell, like, as the ink is drying, she's just panicking in her head because she's like, I am making a huge mistake.
I don't know.
But I'm going to do it anyway because $1,000, why not?
Right. Marjorie's gone when Chester gets back with the good news, and he doesn't know where she's at. When the police officer comes up and says, you guys killed 2 of my brave officers, bashed their heads in, and I'm going to go find them.
And this is the cop that Dandy bought.
Oh, I didn't get that.
Yeah, no, he's the one that's got the hard on for Jimmy.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm. So, turns out Chester comes onto the screen and says, Marjorie's missing, you've got to find her. And there, everyone's like, would you please shut the fuck up about Marjorie? The cops are, Elsa is, the audience, and we're all in it together at this
point. I've never seen Elsa be this, like, sensitive to other people's insanity.
Yeah.
Because she's like, listen, I think you're just confused.
Yeah. At start, but even then, she's like, you gotta shut the fuck up.
Yeah.
So the cops said, we're gonna tear this place apart. And Elsa says, again. But then we get to a wide scene of Chester stumbling through the freak show at night.
Mm-hmm.
Cops are doing a terrible job of tearing this place apart
because
it looks completely untouched.
No, I saw like a deleted scene from this episode because I thought it went a little too far, but really? It was really cool. Yeah.
Got on FX.com and got a little bit of the behind the scenes.
Exactly.
Right on.
And Amazon Eve has this like Cinderella power where she can sing and call all the nature animals to help them clean up. And they're living in a swamp, right? So they just get swamp animals like crocodiles or alligators, whatever the two.
They do two
rats.
Things. They sew
rats.
Giant dresses for her and they're Cracker Jack, tent repair.
Yep.
Organizers, cleaners.
Yep. All you have to do is throw some rancid meat down and they're happy.
Or the last two cops you murdered. Either way.
Just murdered cops is their diet.
That's why they're magical.
Dead vampires, molester uncles.
So anyway, Chester's wandering through and yelling to Marjorie to stop hiding. And Dandy comes off the Ferris wheel. Not the Ferris wheel, the merry-go-round, and says, you're looking for someone? She's not lost.
The sideways Ferris wheel.
And he uses all this information he's gleaned from the private detective. He knows in-depth details about the murder, because apparently Chester's on the lam, and tells him the whole story about how, as you said, the two women met and fell in love while their husband's in a war. And I love the Dandy's reaction when he finds out. He's like, what a sicko! But it's like a delighted.
Yeah. He's
not
so
like, what a sicko. It's what a sicko. And, when they showed, first of all, Marjorie, they showed Marjorie straddle his wife and was beating her well, she's already been to death. She's beating her for like minutes on end. There's just this hammer going up and down and sculpting. But then when we see the woman's face,
she wasn't nearly as bad as the cop, and I don't think she got hit a third of the, or the cop got hit a third of the time.
That's what I'm saying. She is like giving him her love taps with that hammer. Mm-hmm. Like Dell in 10 strokes turned that dude's head to pulp. She's been beating on this woman for God knows how long. Face just, you know, got a little too much rouge on it, looks like.
I think she looks like
a nutcracker.
I believe she was actually just beating a bottle of ketchup that was sitting next to the woman's head.
She was smacking a head of lettuce. She was just chopping up a head of lebbage.
Head of lebbage.
It's lettuce cabbage hybrid, kind of like broccoli.
Lebbage.
A head broccoli. Of lebbage.
What's broccoli a combination of?
You know, I don't know. But I do know the family that bought the film rights to the James Bond franchise got rich by making broccoli. It's a hybrid of cauliflower and Brussels sprouts. That's not right.
Are you serious?
It's a mutant variety of cauliflower and something else.
Oh, my God. So it's an elaborate metaphor. Broccoli is a freak. And she's cutting up broccoli.
You are right.
And lebbage.
Lebbage is the real... Ryan Murphy just reached right in my head and pulled that out.
Why don't we get paid to do this?
I don't
understand.
Technically, I do.
Fuck you.
Anyway, I don't know what the hell is going on. Dandy says that he's firmly on this guy's side because, you know, Chester started to get worried that, you know, Dandy's sounding pretty judgy and pricky.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And he goes, you can find her in the big tent. So he goes in there and tells Marjorie, look, I just bought this fucking place. And she goes, I want to be the headliner. You can be the headliner and you can have whatever you want. And she goes, well, I want you to be a magician and saw the twins in half because she's tired of people being in between them. So at the same time, we're getting like these two scenes I'm discussing intercut because Maggie/Esmeralda comes to Elsa and says, come with me. You got to see something. And then Del goes into Desiree's trailer and she's waiting there for the gun and said, I don't want to hear any more of your homo erectus nonsense and wants to know who'd you kill. And I the truth will always reveal itself. He's like, I just killed those two cops. She's like, no, you killed one of your own.
Do you think he remembered? Because it seemed like at the very first in the beginning of her questioning that he didn't.
No, I think he was just trying to weasel out of it. He's trying to talk himself out of that pit.
Right, eventually. But I think just the first time she asked, he really didn't remember. I don't know.
But he eventually confesses to killing Ma Petite by smothering her. And then we see, surprisingly, the front of his head blown out. Because turns out Elsa May was standing right behind him with Desiree, I can only imagine, is covered in Dell brains.
Seriously.
And skull and
she's
blood.
She's got a bullet lodged right in her gut.
She probably, it's a good thing she got the three breasts because one of them had to take the bullet.
Yeah.
Just an incredibly irresponsible sight line for that firing. And she says, that's all I needed to hear. And that's it for Dell. Hallelujah. I'm so glad.
Sometimes I wish they would get campier with the show. Like how awesome would it be if they shot Dell at the same time and his head just exploded? Like, why not? I mean, she's got three breasts. Who the fuck cares?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, then I would forgive the fact that, you know, the bullets would pass through. And just...
Have you never seen the Cranked movies?
No.
You would love them if you said something that fucked up, because that actually happens. That actually happens in one of the Cranked
movies. Seriously?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. A stripper gets shot in the boob and silicone blows out the side.
Oh, my God. Are you serious?
Now, don't you be rolled.
That
you just,
sounds horrible.
You just made that up.
No, I didn't.
Yes, you did.
I've seen you play Shadows of Mordor. You've exploded plenty of heads.
Oh, I thought you said her breast.
No, not her breast. What's wrong with you?
What would his head blowing up have to do with anything?
I'm just saying that I wish, you know, they would just go full camp.
Oh, show it?
Yeah, because Desiree had a gun too. Like, once he admitted it, why didn't they shoot him at the same time?
Oh, and the bullet meets in the middle and just like the Death Star blows his head apart?
Exactly. Oh. And then it's like ultimate women's justice against young women violence.
I got so excited about the prospect of watching Cranked with you and that hope got dashed. Dashed by your judgy fist.
No, I think the chub you have is from seeing a woman's breast get blown up.
There's no chub on this side of the table.
Oh, it's me then.
Okay, Jesus Christ. Shall we do a little bit? Do you have anything else to say about the episode?
I think it was actually a very strong episode.
I'm glad because this is the episode they needed coming off the break, right?
Yeah. I think Neil Patrick Harris just chewed the entire scenes up, the entire episode.
Mm.
And I think it was a nice return of Jamie Brewer, who's probably, I don't know, she's probably going to die, but I don't know.
You think so? Well, she's clearly tied with the Dandy for being the big bad at the end of the season. I mean, Dell was kind of a big bad. Russell Edgington.
Yeah.
Dandy.
Well, they're doing this thing where they're quickly disposing of their villains, right?
Sure. But they're also introducing them at a fairly good clip as well.
I think the big bad this episode is, or this season has been Jimmy and Dell.
And bad is in quotation marks, sure.
Right. And then the other side, you've got Dandy. And then you have the sort of side bads like Twisty the Clown or.
Sure.
Yeah, Gabourey Sidibe and the law coming down on you.
Right, right, right. Yeah.
I don't even know what I'm saying anymore.
Well, then let's do a little bit of pimping, shall we?
We shall.
Hey, if you'd like to support Bald Move, if you'd like to, like I mentioned just a moment ago, in theory, help me get paid for this gig. You can do so.
It's not in theory. It's real money.
It's happened. We survived a whole year off of this podcasting deal. I'm blown away.
And the income of your girlfriends. Not me. I meet all the other girls that he has on the
sure,
side.
Yeah,
it takes
yeah.
a lot.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I've got a lot of thoroughbreds pulling this chariot. If you like to help
Cecily be the only one.
There's a bunch of different ways you can do so. You can go to support.baldmove.com. Briefly, you got the Amazon link. If you shop on Amazon anyway, please use amazon.baldmove.com because it helps us get paid and you get paid the same great services, prices, and products.
Were you about to say that you get paid too? You do get paid.
Yeah.
In rewards.
We do. And then you can also go to patreon.com/baldmove where you can watch Jim and I podcast live. You can sit in with us lunch at Jim and Aaron's. You get an ad-free feed so you never have to hear my ham-fisted bacon gauntleted pleas for help again.
How much money do I have to pay to see you guys podcast naked?
Negotiable.
Negotiable.
Please send that to ahs@baldmove.com. Your quote, your bid. We can maybe make that happen. You can also go to subbable.com/baldmove where you can commission a custom podcast. If American Horror is not your cup of tea, I don't know why you've listened to us talk about it for an hour.
Yeah.
But if it weren't, you could say like, I want them to do my favorite television show or my favorite movie. And we have to, you're the boss. We can't say no.
I don't have to.
You take you take the reins of this chariot, the Bald Move Empire, and you
drive
jerk
it straight into the ground.
yes, that is your right. You're right by using the magic word of subbable.com, the word of power. I like Jim and I shudder when people say that worldwide.
You can literally make them do anything you want them to.
No, that's not true. That's not true. Although, email it to ahs at baldmove.com. We'll talk about it. Let's do some feedback, yeah?
Yeah.
Frack and T said, hey, Cecily and Aaron, I was surprised.
Hey.
This is pre-the-break feedback. I'm surprised that neither of you picked up on the possibility that Pepper was the mother of the baby. The sister admittedly had quote-unquote clogged pipes and couldn't have a baby of her own. Later, she says to her husband something about how he can't wait to be alone with Pepper. I think, and my buddy D backed me up on Facebook, that the sister and her husband used Pepper to have the baby she always wanted, but it turned out to be a freak, so after a while, they had to cut their losses. We kind of debated that, I thought.
I think that's powerful. It's very strong, D and Frack and T. I respect your opinions quite a bit.
Uh-huh.
But I disagree.
Well, I think there's a lot of evidence suggesting that maybe that's the case, especially since they hammered it home with Sister Eunice saying, you're awfully old to have a child. And she had the clogged pipes anyway. It is interesting that Pepper shows up and suddenly there's a baby.
Well, Jesus's mom did it without even having sex.
But Jesus wasn't a freak. He was a perfect child.
I don't know. I would have expected a different sort of reaction out of Pepper and the father figure. What was his name? Did he ever get a name?
I don't know.
The father.
He murdered a baby. He's nothing to me.
I don't know.
I like your theory. You might not have swayed to Cecily, but I am buying lots of stock in that theory.
You believe that he raped her simple sister?
Yep, I sure do. He murdered his own child.
Why wouldn't
he's not capable of raping his sister's simple or sister?
No. I think that has legs. I agree with all three of you, but okay. It just doesn't work out so well in my head. Like, I feel like she would have a different reaction to him even being around. I mean, that's, even if you're simple, you know you've been majorly violated when you've been raped.
Uh-huh.
And I also think it's weird that if they're going to do something that fucked up, why not make it explicit?
Well, they're still, that's the thing. There's still 2 episodes left in which they can do that.
I don't
that.
Think Pepper's coming back. I think they're done really? With their story, yeah.
Hmm.
That's
a compelling point. It's not like Murphy to just kind of leave something fucked up to your imagination.
I would believe it if you said that all those pieces were there and they just forgot to make the connections. Cool, yeah. Draw your own conclusions. Sure, that's what happened. I don't think the evidence is there, though.
All right. Well, someone who goes by the name of RRR, perhaps triple R, or just, as I'm going to call them, R, says, I absolutely love this episode talking about the orphans one. It was a huge improvement from what we've seen getting to this season, or what we've been getting this season. Not only do we get to see some main story progression with Maggie revealing her and Stanley / Richard / Russell Edgington's real motives to Desiree, but we really got well-done surprises. This is true. We really liked the last 15 minutes or so of this episode. Mm-hmm. Our first surprise was Jimmy's hands on display at the museum. I don't know about y'all, but I thought the camera pan down to Jimmy's crotch was just that. Since Stanley's totally devoid of morals, I thought he had other plans for Jimmy. I had no idea it was about his hands, so that gave me my first genuine surprise of the season. Also,
really?
Elsa does become a star? What? For the first time this season, I'm anticipating the next episode. I think my enjoyment has a lot to do with how asylum-esque it was. Besides the direct connections and fun parallels to that season, it was heavy and dark, much like the entire season of Asylum. If you have the time, I recommend you watch Asylum first, especially since we got 2 characters from that season in Freak Show.
And Aliens.
Yeah, you've seen it. I have not.
Yeah.
It remains the best acted season and has the tautest script to the series, and since you are big fans of Sarah Paulson, she absolutely shines in Asylum.
Dot, dot, dot.
She continues, I have no problem with the seasons being connected. It doesn't ruin or hinder anything for me. Pepper is a fan fave, so I think her inclusion to this season was not only a nod to Asylum / Pepper fans, but a great way to cement that each season is connected. Why Pepper's been committed and her really being framed is well established in Asylum, but because Pepper is our first crossover character, that confirms these seasons take place in the same universe. Sure. It actually hurt a lot more, because you see how tragic Pepper's life was from the start. As far as Sister Mary Eunice, Asylum introduces her as a very innocent and timid young lady, so her exchange with Pepper wasn't odd or anything. She says, is it okay if I give my list of worst characters in AHS and add to an already long email? And I'm going to make the executive order that sure.
Yes.
Sure it is.
Yes.
Murder House. Worst characters. Tate, Constance, Larry, Hayden, and Ben. Asylum is Bloody Face and Dr. Arden. I'd give some others, but it would spoil quite a bit. Okay. Coven. I can actually participate in this one.
You said Coven right, too.
I almost didn't. I stuttered.
No,
I said Coke Coven.
You fixed it immediately.
Coca-Cola.
Coca-Coven. Way to undo all of your hard work.
Fiona and Madame LaLaurie. Papa Legba, too, I guess, but he's not really an evil deity in voodoo. What do you think? Fiona, I don't know. She was pretty bad. Madame LaLaurie is definitely, of all the characters last season, seemed to be the worst.
And a generally really evil real life person too. Did you know she's a real life person?
I did not know that. Holy shit.
No,
are you kidding?
It's a true story.
Wow.
She really mutilated slaves in her house.
Holy fuck.
And in fact, they walk by her house.
Well, see, I was about to say, the only thing about her character is I found it offensive the few times that they tried to redeem her. And now I'm like, find it super offensive.
Yeah, I agree.
Although maybe the point they're trying to make is anyone.
Kathy Bates got hers this season by having that Baltimore accent.
Okay. Shall we move on?
Yes, please.
Matthew R. said, after the break, I was really looking forward to a new AHS episode. As I watched Doogie Howser appear on screen and stay for a while, I wondered if his Broadway skills would be thrown in and thought, it's a little late to bring someone new. Where are they going to go with this? But then in one foul swoop in the line of the show, Dandy appeared with a, what a sicko. I laughed, I cheered, I had to pause and rewatch. That made my earlier frustration of this episode all go away. Once I had my dandy feel, the episode slowly started paying off. I really enjoyed it. Jamie Brewer making an appearance also made this one of my favorites for the season.
Wait, this episode didn't start paying off for you until you saw Dandy? That was really late into the episode.
Yeah, and the only thing I can think of is he must hate Jimmy and Del a hell of a lot more than we do. But anyway.
Some other people.
Like who?
I don't know. There was very little Jimmy and Del.
Yeah, or it implies that he didn't like NPH, which he actually didn't. He actually explicitly says in the email until that moment either, which I was surprised. I thought he was a treat and a delight from the moment he stepped on the screen.
Yeah, he's always fun, no matter what kind of character he's playing. I enjoy him.
But we're glad that brought it around for you there, Matt. And we're hoping.
See you next week.
We're hoping that, exciting. That they can close strong. And again, if you got any of those crazy, weird, crying and spanking offers, you can send them into ahs@baldmove.com.
We've only got 2 episodes left, right?
2 episodes left.
Oh my God, Aaron.
And
look at those episodes.
And you also send feedback there too, I guess.
AlphaHotelSierra@baldmove.com.
At baldmove.com. You can also find us on our forums at forums.baldmove.com and on facebook.com/baldmove. I'm ready to stop podcasting about this episode.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Way to make this a smooth transition into saying goodbye to our audience.
We will see you yet another time. Until then, I'm your host, Aaron.
And I am Cecily.
Good night.